Hello and welcome to Connected, the Sunday Business Post Technology Podcast brought to you in association with Dell EMC. I'm Emmett Ryan, and hello again. Well, this week we're not talking about sex robots, so that's one to get out of the way quickly, or outer space either. We're talking about, well, someone doing their job, essentially. My guest today is Emma Walker. She is the Managing Director of Voxman PR in Europe, and they're an interesting enough company because they deal mostly with businesses in sort of the blockchain space. Big business they dealt with over here in Ireland, who I'm sure a lot of you have read about, Plink. That's sort of the one over here, but most of the companies are sort of based broader Europe and stuff like that. Emma's going to explain that more in a second. But I'm going to ask her a lot about sort of her role, but also what it's like dealing with a whole bunch of blockchain-y businesses. And obviously with the recent Bitcoin having its, which this is being recorded 2 weeks after before it goes out. With the recent, at the time of recording, Bitcoin, which didn't exactly go great for them at the time. What it's like sort of having to go through something like that when you're sort of, you know, doing PR in the blockchain space. So Emma, welcome to Connected.
Thank you very much, Emmett, and I'm pleasure to be here.
Great stuff, Emmett. So you know, because people can't tell from the voice, you're really freaking young. You're 27, and normally when I meet someone your age in this show, they are the founder of a business. They're the person who started it from scratch. You're sort of in a unique position because you're in a senior role and very young, but you didn't start the company. That doesn't happen very often. So, you know, because normally people kind of go, you too young, basically. So for yourself, like, how did you end up at, like, because you know, 26, sorry, and I said 27 there at the start. I'm a terrible person. She's 26. And how did you, that's just going to get me killed by her mother and, you know, on the internet now for getting it wrong, people. How did you at 26 end up being MD of a 17 person operation in Europe for an international, like a multinational PR company?
Well, first of all, my mum thankfully is not on the internet, so hopefully she won't come after. But
you won't be making her listen to this podcast.
she will, but not across social. So I moved to New York City in 2015, and started working at the firm when it was actually just David Waxman, our founder, who was working there.
And that's where the name comes from, folks.
I joined, and at that time we had about four companies working for us. We were a public relations agency on Wall Street, in the fintech space. So across different verticals, not just blockchain.
Now, how did you end up in New York yourself to begin with? Because I'm guessing you're Dublin yourself originally.
I am Dublin. So I am going to be completely honest and say that I went because my partner had an opportunity to take a role over there.
Ah.
And so in the space of about 5 to 6 weeks, I found myself not in Dublin and moving to New York. But I was very, very, very privileged because I was at a time in my life where I felt that there was nothing really holding me back here and I could take that jump. And during university and my early years, I didn't get the opportunity to spend time in the United States, so it made perfect sense. Did I think I was going to go over and work in public relations? Yes, that was the plan. Did I think it'd be for blockchain? Absolutely not. I did not come from that background.
This really just showed the whole sort of, you know, how much you've done everything, because you're kind of going to get a chance when I was in college to go to the US. Like, I think I was your age now when I first went to the States, and it was a Salt Lake City, folks. It wasn't the same as New York. So how did you end up working for Mr. Waxman?
So actually, you know, I applied to an Indeed job.
Oh, yeah.
Online, I saw a PR role at a fintech firm. I thought, why not? I went in for a phone interview. I thought it went well. I went in for in-person. And then next thing you know, I had the role. And I started about a week later, which is quite unusual for Ireland. Usually there's a little bit of a more of a gap. And I remember my very first day, I sat down and David passed me a 60-page white paper on a P2P modular app platform and said this has to be reviewed and edited by the end of the week.
And did you know what a P2P modular app
was? I knew absolutely nothing about that.
Good, because I can assure you I have no idea what you're talking about.
And, you know, I suppose for me,
and I edit a technology magazine.
Yeah, for me, what was really, really, really wonderful was that I never, ever, ever thought that I would intellectually be capable of comprehending what I've comprehended over the past 2 years. So back to the question of, you know, how did I end up back here in Ireland then? I spent 9 months with the company over there. It went from myself and David and a colleague of mine, Jesse, who were kind of the founding team with David, and we built it up to about 10 people by the end of the year. And I decided I really wanted to come home. I mean, I loved my job more than anything, but I really loved my family. So I decided to come back. And
whereas I run from my family.
David met me about a week or 2 weeks before I came back and said, you know, would you consider the idea of opening an office in Europe? And, you know, Europe, we really are seeing a huge growth in blockchain companies coming out of it. So for times and reasons, it also made a huge amount of sense for us. So I took some time and I came back to Ireland. And then in the January, I made the decision to take it up. And now here we are, 1 year on, we officially opened the agency in Ireland in April 2017, and it was myself and a colleague of mine that we joined that month, and then now we're 17 and we're hiring about 15 more over the next 2-3 months.
So that's a lot of bodies.
It is a lot of bodies.
And typically speaking, we don't usually see, because of assorted biases, we don't see 26-year-olds MDing a European operation of a company that's expanding that level, and we don't see women because the world is horrifically sexist.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, well, yeah, it's like, you know, sometimes people are, you know, not good people. So for you, like, sort of what was that challenge like? Because, you know, it's like, because obviously you seem to be, you know, happy out with it, but like, you know, you're aware sort of, you know, it's sort of a case of this doesn't happen often, like, you know, type thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that a conversation I've been having a lot lately is people say, oh, you know, you started a business, that's incredible. So I think it's really important to remember I didn't start the business, as you said before. I was very, very fortunate. When I stepped foot in Ireland after spending that time abroad, we already had the reputation for what David built in the New York City. We also had an influx of new business inquiries. So when people talk about the issues they face of starting a new business, it's mostly around securing business and having driving revenue. We didn't have that issue. So my main challenge that I faced was, you know, looking at 30 office space by myself, and I'd never.
How'd you find that office space in Dublin?
Difficult. But I will
now
say,
there is a diplomatic answer.
What I will say is, one of the best decisions, honestly, I've ever made since coming home was joining the Digital Hub. Really and truly, they've been wonderful as we've scaled. We were not always 17 people. We started as a few, and now they've been exceptional in giving us different office space and making it flexible. So that's been wonderful. But it was tricky, and especially when I was the only person doing it. It was me and any family or friend member that I could bring in to support me on that. Another challenge definitely was recruiting by myself at the beginning. So I recruited in the US with the team. And then I was faced with sitting on the other side of the table by myself, hoping my judgment.
While also trying to do the whole actual like client management stuff.
Absolutely, because I had, at that point, we had about 6 clients that
to
immediately
be managed.
Started. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like you haven't gone grey, I can confirm for the listeners, unlike me who went grey within 9 months joined the Business Post. Coincidence? I think not, people. So how did you keep it all together?
If you said to me now, how was the past year, I would say it was a blur.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
That is the best way to describe it. I think that if you, I didn't struggle on a daily basis, but I think overall it has been a tough year, but it's been a exceptionally exciting one, and I could not be happier that I made that call and made the decision to do this. But it has been, there's been challenges and there's been ups and there's been downs. But
do you feel there's any sort of blowback, pushback because of sort of those inbuilt sort of biases against someone your age?
Absolutely. 100%. I think that one of the main reasons why I think I've relished this job so much is because I think my previous experiences before have been, you're not at that point yet to make kind of bring those ideas to the table or bring your thought process and what you think we should do. And so I was kind of not pushed down, but it wasn't accepted. So I think Ireland has a lot to do when it comes to looking at the age of someone and looking at what. So a big motto that we would have in the company that David instilled in me and now is merit over tenure. And if you are doing an unbelievable good job, if you're doing really, really well at your job, there's no reason why an age should be a factor in that.
Damn straight. As I say, as a very young 36-year-old who realised over time that I'm so good, I can dress like a bum and they're still going to keep me hired here. Admittedly, that's more because I realized wearing a suit into a podcast studio tends to make me nearly choke. Did that for the last one I recorded, folks. Well, actually, given the order of recording, did it for the V-Day special for those of you who are listening to all the episodes. And believe me, I was so physically uncomfortable at the end of that, and it wasn't to do with the subject matter. It was to do with having a, you know, full suit and tie. Was not a good idea. So when I realized I was going to be interviewing Emma here today, it's like kind of going, we're going with my crappiest jumper possible. That's what we're doing. It's very round neck to the point of we're not sure it still has a neck anymore. But we are getting away from my fashion choices briefly, Emma, to get back to the actual primary subject of the thing. I'm going to ask you about what you're doing on the ground here first. But
yeah, absolutely.
You were at, of course, a huge event there in London a couple of weeks ago. Tell us about that.
I was indeed. So about 2 weeks ago, I headed over with a number of members of my team to London Blockchain Week. So actually, it was my first ever London Blockchain Week, which is interesting. I'd spent a number of times at conferences in the United States and then actually MoneyConf last year, where I believe Emma and I, we first met. But it was really interesting. I mean, I did expect it to be a little bit bigger, if I'm honest. I think the whole concept of London Blockchain Week, we would think that it would be, I suppose, a bigger function. But
gotta get you dialed back there a bit, because while a lot of our listeners are big into their blockchain, tell them what London Blockchain Week is meant to be about.
Oh, perfect. Okay, yeah. No problem. So London Blockchain Week is a week-long, about 7-day conference where you would have different initiatives taking place during the week in different venues with different individuals from different companies or projects giving insight onto the different areas of blockchain and what's happening currently in the space.
Okay, and so like you went over, obviously, we've seen with one of your coworkers.
Yeah, absolutely, and a number of our clients
were there as well. Now, your clients, like, you actually include like Dash and Bitcoin as clients, don't you?
So Dash, yes, Lisk, Steam, a number, I believe it's approximately 20 of the top 100, 120 coins are our clients itself.
And so you're working with them at that. Like, so what sort of, you know, type of stuff was going on at it? Like, and what did you, how did you find the event?
Absolutely. So, you know, for the listeners, there's a form of capital raising that has just come into the scene over the past, let's say, year and a half, which is called an ICO, yeah. Initial coin offering, which is the untraditional version of an IPO, initial public offering. So this new form of capital raising, which a lot of startups are using, at a lot of conferences are taking place globally. One or two of the days are where a number of companies will come in and explain, you know, what their company is doing exactly and what the initiative is and describing their form of capital raising that's taking place at the moment. So the first few days were actually focused on that, which a lot of interesting companies were talking about what they're looking to achieve and why they're raising money. And then it moved then on to more of an industry topics and industry news, everything from, you know, what is the industry going to look like over the next 10 years, to regulation, to use cases for blockchain and the sorts.
And like, I'm guessing, like, you know, the needs of a sort of blockchain company are a little different to, you know, I'm just trying to think of regular tech business when it comes to PR, because there's a lot of skepticism, including this corner, I should add, about them. Like, I'm probably one of the more even-handed people when it comes to covering them in the mainstream media, as you all call us, or lamestream, or fake news, as you might also call us, even though, yeah, it's, you know, we're just trying to be even-handed and balanced. There is a lot of sort of, you know, pressure on them that wouldn't necessarily be on, you know, well, say our sponsor, Dell EMC, who are under all sorts of pressure, obviously, but very different, like, as a large, super-sized corporate company. Like, what type of pressure are those companies on that you have to sort of address, like?
Yeah, absolutely. So originally, when I first started working at the company 2 years ago, the level of awareness that had to be given to the public is obviously different than it is now. We mm-hmm. have come a good way. So it really depends on the company that we're working with. If they're quite B2B or working, you know, with business, the awareness will be a little different than the consumer-facing companies. I think when it comes to reaching out to the kind of average Joe Soap on the street, you know, our clients would definitely need to put in a lot more effort into spreading what blockchain is and what the value that will bring to the everyday consumer and to, you know, with the use of cryptocurrencies. So that's definitely something that we focus on, is spreading that awareness. I think that another issue they might find is there is obviously, of course, a negativity towards it that's still present. And I think all of them would agree with that. But it just gives that really good opportunity to prove otherwise and to show the benefits that can come from it.
Now, you know, around the time of recording this, so it's just about a week out from that famous sort of kerplunk we saw for Bitcoin, obviously had a wider effect over the, you know, the views on the assorted cryptocurrencies. Like, so when you're sort of in your job and you're seeing, like, you know, BTCs just going down, like, what's sort of, you know, what's sort of the action plan for someone like yourself? What do you have to do?
So I think it's important to know that. So when I first started with the company, Bitcoin was worth around $450. That was January, February of 2016. 2017, we were looking at the same time at $900. And then obviously then the last, say, you know, 2-3 months, we've been looking at highs of around $18,000-$19,000. To
it
now
did break 20 at one point, yeah.
Yeah, so now we're looking at today, I believe it's around $8,000. So Bitcoin has always been volatile its whole entire life. And I, you know, when it was 900, people were questioning every single day, will it reach 1,000? Will it peak that? So I believe where we've gone is incredible, and I think where we go next, there's a lot to said for. I think even in the traditional space, there, of course, as we saw the last few days, there's also been a crash in the markets.
Of course, yeah.
So I think before we talk about the action plan, I think with cryptocurrencies, they're going to face the exact same volatility to some extent, or just the ups and downs as the traditional market would also.
That's one of the things with crypto, is that, like, people look at the volatility, and mm-hmm. that's kind of what's keeping normal money out for the time being. Like, we are seeing a lot of, you know, more normal money in, but nowhere near the amount you would, you know, percentage of investors is not normal money.
Yeah, and I think as well, Bitcoin was the first cryptocurrency using under blockchain technology. So it's the foundation of what all the rest have been either based off of or built upon, and to you know, putting improvements in for use. So I think it's only the beginning of what we might end up using in the future.
Does John McAfee's Twitter make your life annoying, like, or?
know.
Really? I'm just thinking, like, because, like, you know, for those who are listening who know John McAfee, who, well, it's actually hard to libel him, isn't it? There's that much crazy going on in terms of stuff that's happened in his life. But the big thing he's doing at the moment is he's got his coin of the day tweets out, which you might go, well, that's grand. This is like a guy who's got his big tech background, expert in this. The problem is, because he's a guy with big tech background, expert in this, yada, yada, when he tweets out his coin of the day, the activity in that coin goes crazy, and someone who's working related to that coin has an awful lot more work to do, I'm thinking. So do you have you had a McAfee effect yet, or have you been able to keep it reasonably sane?
No, but I do think, though, that when the conversation revolves around the crash or any form of low dip and price, what we try our best to do is to remember that the technology underneath what is Bitcoin, which is blockchain, because a huge amount of our clients don't specifically focus on the currency itself, but actually focusing on what that technology is doing for them in a use case. So one example is a company we work with called Ambrosis. So they have utilized smart contracts, Internet of Things sensors, and blockchain to track and trace the quality and safety of food across the supply chain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So from farm to fork. And so that's an example of how blockchain and possibly a token inclusion can in turn be so effective and increase the efficiency of the supply chain.
I'm just really happy that Emma thinks I'm, sort of human enough to use a fork and I just eat with my hands. That's very, very kind of her.
Farm to hand?
Farm to finger, maybe, you know. It's like, but it's like, you know, getting away from my slovenly nature at times, which probably is overpaid a little bit. So, Emma, I've got to ask you as well about sort of, you know, what interesting thing which a lot of the journalists listening will be interested in is that, because a lot of the times it's a UK company which has the Irish clients, and let's just say they don't care as much about the Irish media, which can be annoying. You're the Irish company with a load of companies in the UK, because Clink's your only Dublin-based one, last I checked. Most of your businesses are in Britain. What's the challenge like for you in sort of, you know, because obviously you've got to stay on top of the British market, which is immensely segmented, so niche. You know, you got, like, you know, like what Connected does, for example, as a magazine, there will be magazines for each type of feature there, you know, in the UK, because that's the nature of the British market. It's so big and so segmented. Like, what's the challenge for you when you're dealing with that kind of a market from Dublin?
Yeah, absolutely. And so actually, in addition to the UK, we also have clients across Germany, Spain, Estonia.
So it gets worse.
Yeah, so we're actually pan-European completely. And then we also have clients in Asia and the US too. So the Irish office specifically deals with Europe and Asia.
How is your Eastie, by the way?
How is my
Eastie, your Estonian language?
Definitely not fluent.
Okay.
I would say before beginner.
Before beginner, good.
So of course it's a challenge. I think the most important thing that any PR person, regardless of whether we're looking at our market or others, is most important considering the readers, because that's what the journalist is thinking about, their readers. So you need to think, would the journalist be interested in it? Of course. But most importantly, would the journalist want to write this because their readers would be interested in it? So, you know, reaching out to the Irish journalists across the Irish market, if I'm not calling necessarily with an Irish link, I'd be quite hesitant. But, you know, it could be more of a global story, which would then, of course, be relevant to the readers of Ireland.
And it is one of the natures of sort of the nature. Your clients are, irrespective of their size, like, you know, because I know they vary wildly. From day one, they kind of are international businesses.
Absolutely.
With very local bases. And so they are both trying to sort of deal with, you know, because, like, the, you know, what media in Germany versus Spain versus Dublin versus, like, you know, anywhere is so wildly different. So they're trying to both deal with that, but also try to understand, like, they don't understand international markets, because who the heck does? Because, you know, it's like understanding a few hundred markets is challenging. Like, if I, trust me, folks, if we had that, like, you know, Connected would be an even bigger show, and I would be wearing the nicest jumper with still having a very, very generous round neck. You know, it's like, but, like, that's the thing is, like, for them, that must be an issue as well. Like, you know, even when they come to you, it's kind of going, they don't know who they want to talk to, I'm guessing.
So we're quite unique as an agency, because companies come to us because they're looking for, I suppose, exposure across the industry, which is crypto and blockchain. And then that would then transcend into the different markets. We are definitely a global agency. So we might partner with some agencies specifically in certain regions to then also have the support of going out to the local or the regional press of that country, which definitely supports it. But we do drive the strategy for them, and we have to hone back and talk about what regions are most important in the timeline, because we can't go and think about attracting or moving into every region into the media at the one time, which is definitely an issue. And I think not just startups in our space or companies in our space, but overall, I mean, these companies to them are everything, and passion can sometimes override strategy.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say with a lot of businesses.
Like, yeah. And so we have to be conscious of that. And that's what they also take us on board for, to be able to say, look, that seems like a really wonderful decision, but I think we need to be more strategic about our approach here.
And Emma, sort of, you mentioned sort of the growth thing, because you're saying the next 2-3 months you're adding 15 bodies.
Yeah, that's the aim.
That's a lot of people. So why are you basically almost doubling in the next 2-3 months?
So as an agency, we would receive about 15 to 30 new business inquiries a week. Mm-hmm. In the blockchain space, and we will not take on companies onto our remit if we cannot give them the best service. So we are hiring, and we are trying to scale to meet that need as, you know, as quickly as possible, at the same time provide the same level of service that we would otherwise.
And the plan would be to have those desks in Dublin as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Dublin will be our European HQ. I'd say we'll have other locations across Europe as well, probably Zurich or Switzerland, given that it is a huge blockchain hub. But Europe is in
and
Dublin.
And the tax situation is nice.
we actually represent the Crypto Valley Association, because the canton of Zug itself is nicknamed or coined Crypto Valley. So we represent the association that actually, you know, promotes that ecosystem there itself.
Of course, Dunleary now has its crypto coast.
Yes, here in Ireland.
There's a lot of, you know, things where I think genuinely in the space, and I mean this as someone who, I'm a friend of y'all in the crypto space, you got to get better with your names, people, because you're going to run out of the easy ones quickly, and then they're going to get lame. Like, you know, Crypto Valley, that's fair enough. They were, you know, first in, good for them. Crypto Coast, that was when I started thinking, we're stretching it, people. We're stretching it. It's like, so if you're in a crypto space and you're naming some sort of collective or whatever, put the work in. Think about it. I've done some bad branding in my time. This is like, you know, someone who's been down the hard road of bad names. Trust me.
Call Waxman.
Well,
for some support.
Well, at least, yeah. Well, I'm not going to plug the client or plug the company that's on the radio with me now, or the podcast land. But like, that's a bit too obvious. But like, even go to within yourself and think, can I be less lazy at naming a thing? But sorry, getting back on to sort of what you're doing with Switzerland. Do go on, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. So in Dublin, we'll be our European HQ, I think. And we of course, offer communications and public relations, but we've also opened an event department and provide advisory services. And I've no doubt that we'll continue to expand probably our service offering into the future as well.
And have you found, like, interviewing people who are a bit older, sort of, you know, they get kind of get stunned to see somebody who's 26 interviewing them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that... So when I started in the company, I went to conferences and events, and there was one or two women, maybe a mixed 100. And what really, really, really...
This is a really male space crypto as well.
Very male space. But I think this is obviously a problem across multiple sectors, but it is very male dominated. But what really shocks me is that statistic hasn't got much better 2 years on. In events now, there could be 300 people and there might be 10 women or 15 women. Which is statistically isn't great.
Optics
wise,
like.
it's also not wonderful. And you know,
well, commercially as well, it's like, you know, you're under sort of, you know, because if you're keeping that huge chunk of a market basically excluded, whether deliberate or not, like, you know, it's kind of going, I don't care if it's deliberate or not, you're still messing up. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're leaving this huge chunk of potential talent, potential investors, mm-hmm. potential everything on the table without trying.
Yeah, and to be honest, my favorite part of the last 2 years has been defying expectations every single time, because the level of expectation, I suppose, when someone meets me might be a little bit lower than they're gonna receive in terms of service. So that's been wonderful to see that happen.
And like, so, you know, sort of, you're about, well, are you in a year in this job now?
Like, I'm 2 years. We're 10 months into Ireland.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I know you're more than a year with Waxman, but you're 10 months in Ireland. Okay.
Yes.
So do you feel settled at home yet?
Yes, I absolutely do. I wouldn't say we necessarily feel settled in terms of the business community, because I've been so just every day, 16-hour days, trying to, you know, get the office set up, everything from IKEA runs to hiring, recruitment, to accounting, to legal, whatever it might be. So
see, that was a mistake you made with the office, because if you lived in my area, the 140 goes straight from my house.
You know, it would be my priority this year to kind of ingrain ourselves a little bit more into the industry and to get more involved in the Dublin scene and what's happening in terms of startups, blockchain, but also in public relations. My focus has just been on building as quickly as possible and doing what we can.
Well, I got to ask about the Dublin scene and blockchain, because obviously you've got the one company who's not really blockchain, they are mm-hmm. fintech that you've got. Are you seeing many, because when you're saying you got like 15 to 30 companies coming to you every week, are there any Irish ones really coming to you, like, you know?
In the past 2 years, I've had about 3 or 4.
Considering the numbers you're saying have come to you in total, that's small.
Very small. Now, that's not me saying that they don't exist. Of course, they probably do. They just necessarily haven't come to us. We would have, we're very privileged to see that we would have so many people coming to us for our services in the landscape that we would have a good sense of the landscape. I think that Ireland has the potential to do more in this sector. In terms of becoming a leader, I think that they missing the boat is not accurate, but we're the next year, 12 months to a year is really, really, really important. I will say that I think, you know, for example, the Deloitte Blockchain Lab, having that here in Ireland is incredible for credibility and to demonstrate what's actually happening here on the ground. From a startup level, there's a number, but I haven't seen a huge amount.
Now, given I did rag on their name, I've got to ask you, because we were hoping to have them on the show at some point as well, about the Crypto Coast. What have you heard about those guys? Because I hear some good things going on down there.
Absolutely. I saw only recently an article in CoinDesk on their on the Crypto Coast itself and their founder. So I think it's wonderful. I think it'll be excellent to have a hub area where they can go if it is the case that they want to all come together. And
especially because Dunleary, as being from there, could do it something.
And it's Dalgany, Greystones, that whole area, beautiful.
Oh, yeah, well, they're nice, but Dunleary is my hometown, and that's kind of, it's one of those towns where it's like, you know, it's still living off the glories of its shopping centre built in the 60s, and that shopping centre is not
Teddy's ice
glory.
Cream.
Well, yeah, everybody knows Teddy's, yes. We have the pier as well, which is a go-to first date for every bloke aged between 16 and 24, worryingly. But my word, like, we've really got to work in my hometown. You know, I'm Rath Mines now, but, like, you know, it's where I'm from. But, Emma, like, I know I go off on tangents, you may have guessed that during the show, but I do want to bring it back on point for one last thing. And you look at sort of, you know, where you personally are going. I don't mean in PR. I don't mean in crypto. I don't mean, you know, the journey for you having, you know, sort of gone over to New York essentially because of life circumstances. Mm-hmm. And now you're back home and obviously you like home. You were clearly, you like your family, whereas I like my family. I just like being far away from them. You know, it's a really good way of keeping the love. Like, you know, where do you sort of see your role going? Because you're already MD of a company that's going to be 30 bodies by the summer. You know, it's like, where do you see your next step?
I would love to open additional offices globally. I've loved the experience. I would like to challenge myself further and open not in my home country as a further challenge. Whether that's across Europe, but also now we're thinking Asia, probably this year.
When you say Asia now, come on, give us some specifics.
I'd say we're looking at Singapore or Hong Kong. I think that'll be one of our next offices. And I think with Waxman, culturally, to build what we've already built in the offices that we have, it'd be a great experience to be able to go and build elsewhere.
Awesome. Emma Walker, thank you very much. If you want to find you online or anywhere, where should people go looking for you?
Yeah, you can head to our website or on LinkedIn. It's Emma Walker under Waxman.
And you got any Twitter or anything like that for anybody? Or
I do, but my handle would be not sure.
Okay, so she mightn't be a heavy tweeter, is what she's really saying.
That's
there.
Exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, no,
I'm embarrassed of it.
We have a few folks who have been like that, where it's kind of going, yeah, I do have a Twitter account, but I've forgotten what it's called, and that's probably a sign that I'm probably not the best place to find me. So fair enough. Like, you know, it's like, listen, Emma Walker, that has been fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us on Connected. A little bit of housekeeping for y'all. As ever, we are sponsored by Dell EMC for a stuff, and thanks again to them for their huge support of it. This was sort of, you know, the third of three recorded in a two-day span. So for once, I can't tell you who my next guest is, but we have a few folks in mind. One thing to also bear in mind is we are always looking for you guys to reach out to us. So hit me up on Twitter at Action81. And it's like, you know, going pretty good. We're hoping to be weekly for the next 3 weeks after this. And then we will possibly be having a break then around sort of the springtime. Maybe actually be another week then, but then basically I'm going to WrestleMania, people, and that's going to get in the way. You know, it's been a dream since being a child, and now we're all going off. We're going to eat some food in the deep south, and we're going to watch people in spandex throw each other around a ring, and it'll be great. But that's all the housekeeping for y'all for now. And until next time, I'm going to keep being Emmett Ryan.